From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at Acura.com.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
On the cover of May the Horse Be With You, which is subtitled Pack at the Track, there is a photograph of Harvey Pack tossing a racing program into the air. The implication is obvious. Pack has just told his laughing audience that they might as well forget all the advice he's been giving them about beating the races and go with their lucky numbers and favorite colors. Harvey Pack's book is full of the stories he's been telling for years at the track and at the racing seminars over which he has long presided at restaurants like Ciro's in Saratoga Springs. Pack is a fine storyteller, and fans of Tales of the Track should be grateful that his memories, real and imagined, have been collected. When we spoke, I began by saying that I hoped that by interviewing him, I wasn't keeping Harvey away from the track in Saratoga.
Actually, I am missing a lot of races today, and I will be billing you. Or you can bill me.
I should bill you. You're probably saving money by not being there.
Every minute I'm away, I'm saving money, but I can't tell that truthfully.
Talk to me a little bit about that special quality of Saratoga. What distinguishes Saratoga from some of the other racetracks in New York and elsewhere?
Well, for one thing, it's a summer racetrack that's a vacation. You have more children wandering around, and it's so gratifying to see young people enjoying it. Also, the ratio of men to women. At most racetracks, without exaggeration, I'd say it's 3-1, maybe 4-1. Up here, it's closer to even. It's about 60-40. You see more women at the racetrack. In fact, when you're at Saratoga, you don't believe that the game isn't doing well. My grandson was with me yesterday, and we were walking out of the track. He said, "Grandpa, you said it's not doing well. They're very crowded." I said, "Yes, this racetrack is very crowded."
Your father introduced you to thoroughbred racing, and you say of him he, quote, liked the track too much to bet a lot of money. What does that mean exactly?
He never bet beyond his means, and he had money, but he always felt that if you lost a lot of money, you wouldn't be happy going back. And he instilled that in me, and to this day, I'm a very small bettor. People don't realize how small. I actually put the dollar bet in at New York Tracks. I did. I went to them and I said, "Have a dollar bet. Not everybody can afford two." So they put it in.
So the distinction that you make between a gambler and a horse player is basically what? That a gambler has to go back and a horse player wants to go back?
A gambler goes just to win. A horse player goes for what racing offers, the best day in sports. It's actually a participating sport, as you can see when after a race they stamp on their tickets. They get a lot of exercise that way. But to go there to win against the cut, even if you're the best, is very difficult.
You maintain that it's no good going to the racetrack by yourself. That way, you have written, it loses all its panache. Even if you're winning?
Well, winning is even worse. If you're winning, you have nobody to gloat. The whole object of it, it's an ego trip. After the race is over and you have some 6-1 shot and your friend says, "How'd you come up with that?" You say, "What are you, an idiot? It's easy." And then 30 minutes later, the tables are turned and he's calling you an idiot.
Absolutely.
But it's the fun of the camaraderie. It really is.
Your book includes lots of stories about how anxious people can sometimes be to get to the racetrack. One of my favorites involves a crowd of people taking the excursion boat from New York to get to Monmouth Park in New Jersey.
Yes, that was that was with my friend Pete Axthelm, the famous writer who died about 8 or 10 years ago. We went down there, and he always said it's nice ocean breezes going to Monmouth. And one day he talked me into it. And we went down to the ship that takes you to Monmouth Park, and it predated Robert Fulton. And we got on board this thing, and then it goes to Brooklyn. We boarded in Manhattan. It circled around through the Narrows and around the harbor, picked up some more degenerate horse players in Brooklyn, and then wended its way to Atlantic Highlands, where buses would transport us to Monmouth Park. As we are approaching Atlantic Highlands, a little boat, maybe a little fishing boat, there was a woman in it and two men, and we sideswiped it gently and tilted it, and they fell in the water. And people yelled, "We just hit a boat!" And all the horse players went to that side of the ship, making it list, and they all wanted to see how the people were doing, and many of them were yelling, "Let them drown, we'll miss the double." And people said, "Throw them a life preserver, leave them there." And people were really mad, and the captain is screaming, "Stop going to that side of the ship, it'll turn over." So now we had to disperse so that we were balanced, and they eventually got these poor people and threw them a life preserver, and sad to say, we made the double.
Tell us about the horse player who commuted from New York City to Saratoga every day and was horrified when his friends suggested that he should stay the week at the house they'd rented in Saratoga Springs.
This guy, and this goes back before simulcasting, before television in the home, this was goes back when we went up to Saratoga. There was no racing in New York. And this fellow lived out on Long Island, and he would get up every morning at 6 a.m., take a train into Manhattan, go to a place on, I think, 40th Street and 8th Avenue, Kasser Tours. They ran a bus, daily bus, to Saratoga, to the races and back. He would get on that bus, he'd go up there, he'd bet all the races, get back on the bus, go home, take the Long Island Railroad back to where he lived, go to get home about 11, 12 o'clock at night, go to sleep, get up the next morning, 6 a.m., do the same thing. So after a while, he was friendly with people at the track, and one of them said to him, "Why do you do this every day? We rent a place. You could stay with us. Come up for the meeting. Stay the 24-day meeting. Enjoy yourself." And he looked at them askance, and he said, "What? And leave my family?"
Harvey, of the business of marketing racing, you write that it was tricky because, quote, "we were marketing a narcotic." Is that perhaps unnecessarily harsh?
It's harsh, but it's basically true, because no matter how you look at it, what holds racing together is gambling. And gambling can be a disease. One of the things that I've told you, that I never bet a lot of money. I love it too much. But people get carried away. They don't keep records. They lose sight of everything, and they can lose. And to give them a T-shirt is wonderful, but it's not what we're selling. We're not selling beautiful horses. We're not selling the colors of the silks. We're selling the excitement of handicapping, picking a winner, and cashing a ticket. So in a sense, sure, it's not a narcotic like heroin, but it's sort of a drug, let's be honest. There was this fellow down at Aqueduct. I knew him. His name was Clark. When I say degenerate horse player, I say it affectionately. But he was a degenerate gambler. He just bet too much. And I would see him all the time, and I knew that he had lost it all. His wife had thrown him out. He had a lovely home. She divorced him. I think he was allowed visitation rights to his children, and that was all. He rented a furnished room near the track, and he just sat on a bench in Aqueduct. And I saw Clark one day, and I said to him, knowing all these things had happened to him, "How you doing, Clark?" And he looked up at me and he said, "I don't know. I think I'm about even."
Though your business when you were broadcasting from the racetrack was to convince people that you knew what you were talking about, even when you won, you often told your audience that you had lost. Why was that?
Because people like you to lose. It's not that they like you to lose. We do these seminars at Ciro's now up in Saratoga, and people come and they love it. I have a handicapper. They love it. But when that handicapper tells them a horse, and they bet another horse, and they win and he loses, they're very happy. It's when I was doing the Breeders' Cup for NBC, Mike Weissman, who was the producer, said, "I'm giving you a mythical bankroll." And I said, "Let me tell you something, Mike. When you give me that mythical bankroll, every viewer wants me to lose it." And he said, "Why?" I said, "Because they want me to lose. However, in my case, don't worry about it. I will." And I did.
It was easy.
Of course. Easier to lose it than to win.
All the one-liners aside, there is an undercurrent of sadness in May the Horse Be With You, and that's because thoroughbred racing, which was so popular when you began going to the track, is in such a slump now. What are the chances that the racing game will come back?
Zero. Not come back. See, come back it already has. The overall handle is up. The tracks aren't doing that badly. Simulcasting has saved it, but it's a quick fix. It's not creating the kind of fans that we created when I was younger. My dad took me. Other people went with their older brother. And that's how they came to love the game. Now, when they're of age to do anything like that, They go to casinos, quicker fix. They go to a video poker machine. It takes 5 seconds. The racing has lost its monopoly, and with it, it's lost its drive.
Harvey Pack is the author of May the Horse Be With You, subtitled Pack at the Track, published by Daily Racing Form Press. He joined me from the studios of WAMC in Albany. Harvey, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
My conversation with Harvey Pack will be featured on this week's show. I'll also be talking with George Dorman of Sports Illustrated. He's been covering the story of Michael Vick's transgressions and has some thoughts about how that miserable mess will be resolved. We'll have a story about Rick Ankiel, the former St. Louis Cardinals pitcher who's currently a St. Louis Cardinals outfielder and home run hitter. We'll hear from you via your letters, and we'll have a story on August skiing in the state of Washington. And then, for those who feel the program has been insufficiently violent, we'll have a story of how divorced people can work out their resentment of their former partners by banging into them in a demolition derby event designed especially for them. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program by visiting onlyagame.org.